Try to free him again if he's allowed to remain at the Institute? Do you think you can fool me as easily as you fool your parents, Isabel Lightwood? Isabel turned scarlet. Magnus cut in before she could reply. Look, it's not a problem, he said. I can keep Jace at my place easily enough. The Inquisitor turned to Alec. Your warlock does realize, she said, that Jonathan is a witness of utmost importance to the Clave. He's not my warlock. The tops of Alec's angular cheekbones flared a dark red. I've held prisoners for the Clave before, Magnus said. The joking edge had left his voice. I think you'll find I have an excellent record in that department. My contract is one of the best. Was it Clary's imagination, or did his eye seem to linger on Mayris when he said that? She didn't have time to wonder. The Inquisitor made a sharp noise that might have been amusement or disgust and said, It's settled then. Let me know when he's well enough to talk, Warlock. I've still got plenty of questions for him. Of course, Magnus said. But Clary got the sense that he wasn't really listening to her. He crossed the lawn gracefully and came to stand over Jace. He was as tall as he was thin, and when Clary glanced up to look at him, she was surprised how many stars he blotted out. Can he talk? Magnus asked Clary, indicating Jace. Before Clary could respond, Jace's eyes slid open. He looked up at the warlock, dazed and dizzy. What are you doing here? Magnus grinned down at Jace, and his teeth sparkled like sharpened diamonds. Hey, roommate, he said. Part 2. The Gates of Hell. Chapter 8. The Seelie Court. In the dream, Clary was a child again, walking down the narrow strip of beach near the boardwalk at Coney Island. The air was thick with the smell of hot dogs and roasting peanuts, and with the shouts of children. The sea surged in the distance, its blue-gray surface alive with sunlight. She could see herself as if from a distance, wearing oversized child's pajamas. The hems of the pajama bottoms dragged along the beach. Damp sand grated between her toes, and her hair hung heavily against the nape of her neck. There were no clouds, and the sky was blue and clear, but she shivered as she walked along the perimeter of the water toward a figure she could see only dimly in the distance. As she approached, the figure became suddenly clear, as if Clary had focused the lens of a camera. It was her mother, kneeling in the ruins of a half-built sandcastle. She wore the same white dress Valentine had put her in at Renwick's. In her hand was a twisted bit of driftwood, silvery from long exposure to salt and wind. Have you come to help me? Her mother said, raising her head. Jocelyn's hair was undone and it blew free in the wind, making her look younger than she was. There's so much to do and so little time. Clary swallowed against the hard lump in her throat.
Mom, I've missed you, Mom.
Jocelyn smiled. I've missed you too, honey. But I'm not gone, you know. I'm only sleeping.
Then how do I wake you up? Clary cried.
But her mother was looking out to sea, her face troubled. The sky had turned a twilight iron gray, and the black clouds looked like heavy stones. Come here, said Jocelyn. And when Clary came to her, she said, Hold out your arm. Clary did. Jocelyn moved the driftwood over her skin. The touch stung like the burning of a stelae, and left the same thick black line behind. The rune Jocelyn drew was a shape Clary had never seen before, but she found it instinctively soothing to her eye. What does this do? It should protect you. Clary's mother released her. Against what? Jocelyn didn't answer, just looked out toward the sea. Clary turned and saw that the ocean had drawn far out, leaving brackish piles of garbage, heaps of seaweed and flopping desperate fish in its wake. The water had gathered itself into a huge wave, rising like the side of a mountain, like an avalanche ready to fall. The shouts of children from the boardwalk had turned into screams. As Clary stared in horror, she saw that the side of the wave was as transparent as a membrane, and through it she could see things that seemed to move under the surface of the sea, huge, dark, shapeless things pushing against the skin of the water. She threw up her hands and woke up gasping.
her heart slamming painfully against her ribs. She was in her bed in the spare room in Luke's house. An afternoon light was filtering in through the curtains. Her hair was plastered to her neck with sweat, and her arm burned and ached. When she sat up and flipped on the bedside light, she saw without surprise the black mark that ran the length of her forearm. When she went into the kitchen, she found Luke had left breakfast for her in the form of a Danish in a grease-spotted cardboard box. He'd also left a note stuck to the fridge. Gone to the hospital. Clary ate the Danish on the way to meet Simon. He was supposed to be on the corner of Bedford by the L train stop at 5, but he wasn't. She felt a faint tug of anxiety before she remembered the used record store on the corner of 6th. Sure enough, he was sorting through the CDs in the new arrivals section. He wore a rust-colored corduroy jacket with a torn sleeve and a blue t-shirt bearing the logo of a headphone-wearing boy dancing with a chicken. He grinned when he saw her.
"Eric thinks we should change the name of our band to Mojo Pie," he said, by way of greeting.
"What is it now? I forgot."
"Champagne Enema," he said, selecting a Yola Tango CD.
"Change it," Clary said. "By the way, I know what your t-shirt means."
"No, you don't."
He headed up to the front of the store to buy his CD.
"You're a good girl."
Outside, the wind was cold and brisk. Clary drew her striped scarf up around her chin. "I was worried when I didn't see you at the L stop." Simon pulled his knit cap down, wincing as if the sunlight hurt his eyes.
"Sorry, I remembered I wanted this CD and I thought..."
"It's fine." She waved a hand at him. "It's me. I panic way too easily these days."
"Well, after what you've been through, no one could blame you."
Simon sounded contrite.
"I still can't believe what happened to the Silent City. I can't believe you were there."
"Neither could Luke. He freaked out completely."
"I bet."
They were walking through McCarran Park, the grass underfoot turning winter brown, the air full of golden light. Dogs were running off their leashes among the trees. "Everything changes in my life, and the world stays the same," Clary thought.
"Have you talked to Jace since it happened?"
Simon asked, keeping his voice neutral. "No, but I checked in with Isabel and Alec a few times. Apparently he's fine."
"Did he ask to see you? Is that why we're going?"
"He doesn't have to ask." Clary tried to keep the irritation out of her voice as they turned onto Magnus's street. It was lined with low warehouse buildings that had been converted into lofts and studios for artistic and wealthy residents. Most of the cars parked along the shallow curb were expensive. As they neared Magnus's building, Clary saw a lanky figure unfurl itself from where it had been sitting on the stoop. Alec. He was wearing a long black coat made of the tough, slightly shiny material shadowhunters like to use for their gear. His hands and throat were marked with runes, and it was evident from the faint shimmer in the air around him that he was glamored into invisibility.
"I didn't know you were bringing the mundane."
His blue eyes flicked uneasily over Simon.
"That's what I like about you people," said Simon. "You always make me feel so welcome."
"Oh, come on, Alec," said Clary. "What's the big deal? It's not like Simon hasn't been here before." Alec heaved a theatrical sigh, shrugged, and led the way up the stairs. He unlocked the door to Magnus's apartment using a thin silver key, which he tucked back into the breast pocket of his jacket the moment he'd finished, as if he'd hoped to keep his companions from seeing it. In daylight, the apartment looked the way an empty nightclub might look during off hours, dark, dirty, and unexpectedly small. The walls were bare, spackled here and there with glitter paint, and the floorboards where fairies had danced a week ago were warped and shiny with age. "Hello, hello," Magnus swept toward them. He was wearing a floor-length green silk dressing gown, open over a silver mesh shirt and black jeans. A glittering red stone winked in his left ear. "Alec, my darling, Clary, and Ratboy." He swept a bow toward Simon, who looked annoyed. "To what do I owe the pleasure?"
"We came to see Jace," Clary said. "Is he all right?"
"I don't know," Magnus said. "Does he normally just lie on the floor like that without moving?"
"What?"
Alec began, and broke off as Magnus laughed. "That's not funny."
"You're so easy to tease,"
And yes, your friend is just fine. Well, except that he keeps putting all my things away and trying to clean up. Now I can't find anything. He's compulsive.
Jace does like things neat, Clary said, thinking of his monk-like room at the Institute.
Well, I don't.
Magnus was watching Alec out of the corner of his eye while Alec stared off into the middle distance, scowling.
Jace is in there if you want to see him.
He pointed toward a door at the end of the room. In there turned out to be a medium-sized den, surprisingly cozy, with smudged walls, velvet curtains drawn across the windows, and cloth-draped armchairs marooned like fat, colorful icebergs in a sea of nubbly beige carpeting. A hot pink couch was made up with sheets and a blanket. Next to it was a duffel bag stuffed full of clothes. No light came through the heavy curtains. The only source of illumination was a flickering television screen, which glowed brightly despite the fact that the television itself was not plugged in.
"What's on?" Magnus inquired. "What not to wear?" came a familiar drawling voice, emanating from a sprawled figure in one of the armchairs.
He sat forward, and for a moment Clary thought Jace might get up and greet them. Instead, he shook his head at the screen.
"High-waisted khaki pants? Who wears those?"
He turned and glared at Magnus.
"Nearly unlimited supernatural power," he said, "and all you do is use it to watch reruns? What a waste."
"Also, TiVo accomplishes much the same thing," pointed out Simon.
"My way is cheaper."
Magnus clapped his hands together, and the room was suddenly flooded with light. Jay slumped in the chair, raised an arm to cover his face.
"Can you do that without magic?"
"Actually," said Simon, "yes, if you watched infomercials, you'd know that."
Clary sensed the mood in the room was deteriorating.
"That's enough," she said.
She looked at Jace, who had lowered his arm and was blinking resentfully into the light.
"We need to talk," she said, "all of us, about what we're going to do now."
I was going to watch Project Runway," said Jace. "It's on next."
"No, you're not," said Magnus.
Snapped his fingers, and the TV went off, releasing a small puff of smoke as the picture died.
"You need to deal with this."
"Suddenly you're interested in solving my problems?"
"I'm interested in getting my apartment back. I'm tired of you cleaning all the time."
Magnus snapped his fingers again, menacingly.
"Get up."
"Or you'll be the next one to go up in smoke," said Simon with relish.
"There's no need to clarify my finger snap," said Magnus.
The implication was clear in the snap itself.
"Fine."
Jace got up out of the chair. He was barefoot, and there was a line of purplish silver skin around his wrist where his injuries were still healing. He looked tired, but not as if he were still in pain.
"You want a round table meeting? We can have a round table meeting."
"I love round tables," said Magnus brightly. "They suit me so much better than square."
In the living room, Magnus conjured up an enormous circular table surrounded by 5 high-backed wooden chairs.
"That's amazing," Clary said, sliding into a chair. It was surprisingly comfortable. "How can you create something out of nothing like that?"
"You can't," said Magnus. "Everything comes from somewhere. These come from an antiques reproduction store on 5th Avenue, for instance. And these..."
Suddenly, 5 white wax paper cups appeared on the table, steam rising gently from the holes in their plastic lids.
"Come from Dean and DeLuca on Broadway."
"That seems like stealing, doesn't it?"
Simon pulled a cup toward him. He drew the lid back.
"Ooh, mochaccino." He looked at Magnus. "Did you pay for these?"
"Sure,"
said Magnus, while Jace and Alec snickered.
"I make dollar bills magically appear in their cash register."
"Really?"
"No."
Magnus popped the lid off his own coffee.
"But you can pretend I did if it makes you feel better."
"So, first order of business is what?"
Clary put her hands around her own coffee cup. Maybe it was stolen, but it was also hot and full of caffeine. She could stop by Dean and DeLuca and drop a dollar in their tip jar some other time. "Figuring out what's going on would be a start," she said, blowing on her foam.
"Jace, you said what happened in the Silent City was Valentine's fault?"
Jace stared down at his coffee.
"Yes."
Alec put his hand on Jace's arm.
What happened? Did you see him?
I was in the cell, said Jace, his voice dead. I heard the Silent Brothers screaming. Then Valentine came downstairs with something. I don't know what it was. Like smoke with glowing eyes. A demon, but not like any I've ever seen before. He came up to the bars and he told me...
Told you what?
Alec's hand slid up Jace's arm to his shoulder. Magnus cleared his throat. Alec dropped his hand, red-faced, while Simon grinned into his undrunk coffee.
Milartek, Jace said. He wanted the Soul Sword and he killed the Silent Brothers to get it.
Magnus was frowning.
Alec, last night when the Silent Brothers called for your help, where was the Conclave? Why was no one at the Institute?
Alec looked surprised to be asked.
There was a Downworlder murder in Central Park last night. A fairy child was killed. The body was drained of blood.
I bet the Inquisitor thinks I did that, too, said Jace. My reign of terror continues.
Magnus stood up and went to the window. He pushed the curtain back, letting in just enough light to silhouette his hawk-like profile.
Blood, he said half to himself. I had a dream 2 nights ago. I saw a city all of blood, with towers made of bone, and blood ran in the streets like water.
Simon slewed his eyes over to Jace.
Is standing by the window muttering about blood something he does all the time?
No, said Jace. Sometimes he sits on the couch and does it.
Alec shot them both a sharp glance.
Magnus, what's wrong?
The blood, said Magnus again. It can't be a coincidence.
He seemed to be looking down at the street. Sunset was coming on fast over the silhouette of the city in the distance. The sky was striped with bars of aluminum and rosy gold.
There have been several murders this week, he said.
Of Downworlders?
A warlock, killed in an apartment tower down by the South Street seaport. His neck and wrists were cut and the body drained of blood. And a werewolf was killed at the Hunter's Moon a few days ago. The throat was cut in that case as well.
It sounds like vampires, said Simon, suddenly very pale.
I don't think so, Jace said. At least Raphael said it wasn't the Night Children's work. He seemed adamant about it.
Yeah, 'cause he's trustworthy, muttered Simon.
In this case, I think he was telling the truth, said Magnus, drawing the curtain closed. His face was angular, shadowed. As he came back to the table, Clary saw that he was carrying a heavy book bound in green cloth. She didn't think he'd been holding it a few moments ago.
There was a strong demonic presence at both locations. I think someone else was responsible for all 3 deaths. Not Raphael and his tribe, but Valentine.
Clary's eyes went to Jace. His mouth was a thin line, but why do you say that, was all he asked.
The Inquisitor thought the fairy murder was a diversion, she said quickly, so that he could plunder the Silent City without worrying about the Conclave.
There are easier ways to create a diversion, said Jace, and it is unwise to antagonize the fair folk. He wouldn't have murdered one of the clan of fairy if he didn't have a reason.
He had a reason, said Magnus. There was something he wanted from that fairy child, just as there was something he wanted from the warlock and the werewolf he killed.
What's that? Asked Alec.
Their blood, said Magnus, and opened the green book.
The thin parchment pages had words written on them that glowed like fire.
Ah, he said, here.
He looked up, tapping the page with a sharp fingernail. Alec leaned forward.
You won't be able to read it, Magnus warned him. It's written in a demon language, Pergadic.
I can recognize the drawing, though. That's Milartek. I've seen it before in books.
Alec pointed at an illustration of a silver sword, familiar to Clary. It was the one she'd noticed was missing from the wall of the Silent City.
The Ritual of Infernal Conversion, Magnus said. That's what Valentine's trying to do.
The what of what? Clary frowned.
Every magical object has an alliance, Magnus explained. The alliance of the Soul Sword is seraphic, like those angel knives you shadow hunters use, but 1,000 times more so, because its power was drawn from the angel himself, not simply from the invocation of an angelic name. What Valentine wants to do is reverse its alliance, make it an object of demonic rather than angelic power.
Lawful good to lawful evil, said Simon, pleased.
He's quoting Dungeons and Dragons, said Clary. Ignore him. As the angel's sword, Melartek's use to Valentine would be limited, said Magnus. But as a sword whose demonic power is equal to the angelic power it once possessed, well, there is much it could offer him. Power over demons, for one. Not just the limited protection the cup might offer, but power to call demons to him, to force them to do his bidding. A demon army? Said Alec.
This guy is big on armies, observed Simon.
Power even to bring them into Idris, perhaps, Magnus finished.
I don't know why he'd want to go there, Simon said. That's where all the demon hunters are, aren't they? Wouldn't they just annihilate the demon guys?
Demons come from other dimensions, said Jace. We don't know how many of them there are. Their numbers could be infinite. The wardings keep most of them back, but if they all came through at once...
Infinite, Clary thought.
She remembered the greater demon, Abaddon, and tried to imagine hundreds more of it, or thousands. Her skin felt cold and exposed.
I don't get it, said Alec. What does the ritual have to do with dead downworlders?
To perform the ritual of conversion, you need to seethe the sword until it's red hot, then cool it 4 times, each time in the blood of a downworld child. Once in the blood of a child of Lilith, once in the blood of a child of the moon, once in the blood of the child of the night, and once in the blood of a child of fairy, Magnus explained.
Oh my God, said Clary. So he's not done killing. There's still one more child to go.
2 more. He didn't succeed with the werewolf child. He was interrupted before he could get all the blood he needed. Magnus shut the book, dust puffing out from its pages. Whatever Valentine's ultimate goal is, he's already more than halfway to reversing the sword. He's probably able to garner some power from it already. He could already be calling on demons.
But you'd think if he were doing that, there'd be reports of disturbances, excess demon activity, Jay said. But the Inquisitor said the opposite is true, that everything's been quiet.
And so it might be, said Magnus, if Valentine were calling all the demons to him. No wonder it's quiet.
The group stared at one another. Before anyone could think of a single thing to say, a sharp noise cut through the room, making Clary start. Hot coffee spilled onto her wrist, and she gasped at the sudden pain.
It's my mother, said Alec, checking his phone. I'll be right back.
He went over to the window, head down, voice too low to overhear.
Let me see, said Simon, taking Clary's hand.
There was an angry red blotch on her wrist where the hot liquid had scalded her. It's okay, she said. No big deal. Simon lifted her hand and kissed the injury.
All better now.
Clary made a startled noise. He had never done anything like that before. Then again, that was the sort of thing boyfriends did, didn't they?
Drawing her wrist back, she looked across the table and saw Jay staring at them, his golden eyes blazing.
You're a shadow hunter, he said. You know how to deal with injuries.
He slid his stele across the table toward her.
Use it.
No, Clary said, and pushed the stele back across the table at him.
Jay slammed his hand down on the stele.
Clary? She said she doesn't want it, said Simon.
Ha ha.
Ha ha?
Jace looked incredulous.
That's your comeback?
Alec, folding his phone, approached the table with a puzzled look.
What's going on?
We seem to be trapped in an episode of One Life to Waste, Magnus observed. It's all very dull.
Alec flicked a strand of hair out of his eyes.
I told my mother about the infernal conversion.
Let me guess, said Jace. She didn't believe you. Plus, she blamed everything on me.
Alec frowned. Not exactly. She said she'd bring it up with the Conclave, but that she didn't have the Inquisitor's ear right now. I get the feeling the Inquisitor has pushed Mom out of the way and taken over. She sounded angry.
The phone in his hand rang again. He held up a finger.
Sorry, it's Isabel. One sec.
He wandered to the window, phone in hand.
Jace glanced over at Magnus.
I think you're right about the werewolf at the Hunter's Moon. The guy who found his body said someone else was in the alley with him. Someone who ran off.
Magnus nodded.
It sounds to me like Valentine was interrupted in the middle of doing whatever it is he does to get the blood he needs.
He'll probably try again with a different lycanthrope child.
I ought to warn Luke, Clary said, half rising out of her chair.
Wait.
Alec was back, phone in hand, a peculiar expression on his face.
What did Isabel want? Jace asked.
Alec hesitated.
Isabel says the Queen of the Seelie Court has requested an audience with us.
Sure, said Magnus. And Madonna wants me as a backup dancer on her next world tour.
Alec looked puzzled.
Who's Madonna?
Who's the Queen of the Seelie Court? Said Clary.
She is the Queen of Fairy, said Magnus. Well, the local one, anyway.
Jace put his head in his hands.
Tell Isabel no.
But she thinks it's a good idea, Alec protested.
Then tell her no twice.
Alec frowned. What's that supposed to mean?
Oh, just that some of Isabel's ideas are world beaters, and some are total disasters. Remember that idea she had about using abandoned subway tunnels to get around under the city? Talk about giant rats.
Let's not, said Simon. I'd rather not talk about rats at all, in fact.
This is different, said Alec. She wants us to go to the Seelie Court.
You're right, this is different, said Jace. This is her worst idea ever.
She knows a knight in the court, said Alec. He told her that the Seelie Queen is interested in meeting with us. Isabel overheard my conversation with our mother, and she thought if we could explain our theory about Valentine and the Soul Sword to the Queen, the Seelie Court would side with us. Maybe even ally with us against Valentine.
Is it safe to go there? Clary asked.
Of course it's not safe,
Jace said, as if she'd asked the stupidest question he'd ever heard. She shot a glare at him.
I don't know anything about the Seelie Court. Vampires and werewolves I get. There are enough movies about them, but fairies are little kid stuff. I dressed up as a fairy for Halloween when I was 8. My mom made me a hat shaped like a buttercup.
I remember that. Simon had leaned back in his chair, arms crossed over his chest. I was a transformer. Actually, I was a Decepticon.
Can we get back to the point? Magnus asked.
Fine, Alec said. Isabel thinks, and I agree, that it's not a good idea to ignore the fair folk. If they want to talk, what harm can it do? Besides, if the Seelie Court were on our side, the Clave would have to listen to what we have to say.
Jace laughed without any humor.
The fair folk don't help humans.
Shadowhunters are not human, Clary said. Not really.
We are not much better to them, said Jace.
They can't be worse than vampires, Simon muttered. And you did all right with them.
Jace looked at Simon as if he were something he'd found growing under the sink.
Did all right with them? By which I take it you mean we survived?
Well,
fairies, Jace went on, as if Simon hadn't spoken, are the offspring of demons and angels, with the beauty of angels and the viciousness of demons. A vampire might attack you if you entered its domain. But a fairy could make you dance until you died with your legs ground down into stumps, trick you into a midnight swim, and drag you screaming underwater until your lungs burst, fill your eyes with fairy dust until you gouge them out at the roots.
Jace, Clary snapped, cutting him off mid-rant. Shut up! Jesus, that's enough!
Look, it's easy to outsmart a werewolf or a vampire, Jace said. They're no smarter than anyone else. But fairies live for hundreds of years, and they're as cunning as snakes. They can't lie, but they love to engage in creative truth-telling. They'll find out whatever it is you want most in the world and give it to you, with a sting in the tail of the gift that will make you regret you ever wanted it in the first place. He sighed. They're not really about helping people, more about harm disguised as help.
And you don't think we're smart enough to know the difference? Asked Simon.
I don't think you're smart enough not to get turned into a rat by accident.
Simon glared at him.
I don't see that it matters what you think we should do, he said. Considering that you can't go with us in the first place, you can't go anywhere.
Jace stood up, knocking his chair back violently.
You are not taking Clary to the Seelie Court without me, and that is final.
Clary stared at him with her mouth open. He was flushed with anger, teeth gritted, veins corded in his neck. He was also avoiding looking at her. I can take care of Clary, Alex said, and there was hurt in his voice.